Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTG Basketball. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me as always, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
Nothing much. This is actually going to be my last podcast from this desk. I got a new desk, I got a new chair, and my office, well, my bedroom is going to change slightly after this podcast. So this is the changing of an era, the end of an era.
New year, new Corey, new desk. It looks like he's making moves out there, trying to pick up that podcasting game. And today we're talking trades, just like last time. Over pretty much the next month up to the deadline, we'll be talking trades. The OTG trade deadline marathon has been wild. Pretty much over 30 trades already up, so make sure you hit up the site. And as always, you can check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Dash Radio, Google Play, and YouTube. But Corey, let's get right into it. We'll go all the way back to day four, starting off with a trade from Dalton Pence. So in this trade, Charlotte would receive Zach Randolph, Iman Shumpert, Kosta Kufis, and Sacramento would receive Nicholas Batum in his giant contract, Jeremy Lamb, Frank Kaminsky, a 2019 first-round pick, and a 2020 second-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I don't know how likely this would be for the Kings standpoint of wanting to take on Batum's contract and bring Batum in. I don't think they would want to bring in a guy like Batum at this point in time without all the young guys they've had and the success they've had early. But I think Jeremy Lamb would be a slight upgrade over Iman Shumpert, a little bit younger too. Then for the Hornets, the win for the Hornets is simply the fact that they're getting rid of Batum. The contract's off the books. You know, Shumpert, Kufis, and Randolph are all expiring. So that gives the Hornets a real opportunity to not only max Kemba Walker, but then they would have the ability to maybe bring in, an all-star or a borderline all-star along with them.
Yeah, definitely a more positive trade for the Hornets, I guess, in a sense, for the long term. Short term, losing Jeremy Lamb pretty much signals that they're not going to make the playoffs because he's arguably been their second or third best player. So I think from that standpoint, it's like, all right, the Hornets are giving up on the season, but they are getting rid of Batum's contract, and they are giving up a first and second round pick. So it's a lot to get rid of. But from the Kings' perspective, it's like you said, do they really want to take in Batum? They have a lot of young guys that are blossoming. They're going to have to pay them. So I don't know if you want to take on the rest of Batum's contract. I think 24 this year, then the next 2 years is like $50 million combined. So it's just a lot of contract to take on for a young team that I don't think is rebuilding. They're more on the up and up after the way they performed this year.
No, I would agree. They've been probably the greatest story so far this year, is the Kings that we all thought were going to be another dysfunctional season ahead of them, and they're in the playoff race.
Yeah, they're finally starting to turn things around. Moving on to day 4.1, our boy Nick, he's got a crazy trade. He's been cooking up some real creative ones. The Knicks would receive Solomon Hill, Norman Powell, C.J. Miles, and a second-round pick from the Raptors. New Orleans would receive Jonas Valanciunas, Tim Hardaway Jr., OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, a second rounder from the Knicks, and two firsts from Toronto, and the Raptors would receive Anthony Davis and Courtney Lee.
All right, so obviously these are the dream case scenarios for the sweepstakes of Anthony Davis becoming available, as you can tell. For the Raptors standpoint, anytime you can get a guy like Anthony Davis, you get rid of OG, Siakam, you get rid of whatever you can, because Anthony Davis is a once-in-a-lifetime player. You pair him up with Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry. They didn't get rid of Danny Green in this scenario, so that would be still a really tough starting five. And then for the Pelicans, this is still a good deal, because even though you're losing Davis, you're getting OG, which is a very nice young piece. Tim Hardaway Jr. showing some flashes. Valanciunas can play. He's had one of his best seasons coming off the bench. Siakam, obviously, as we know, is the most improved candidate. So I like that standpoint. For me, I just don't understand why the Knicks are in this. They're getting rid of Tim Hardaway Jr.'s contract, but they're getting only a second-round pick, and Solomon Hill is expiring, but yuck, Norman Powell's been
actually,
okay.
Yeah, he's not even expiring. It's another error on the trade machine. So Solomon Hill actually has $13 million on his contract next year.
Okay, yeah, so this is literally a terrible trade for the Knicks. This makes no sense for the Knicks, besides the fact that they're getting rid of Hardaway Jr., but even still then, if Solomon Hill's on the books for another year, then this doesn't really give them that much cap help.
Yeah, exactly. It makes no sense for the Knicks, because they'd have Solomon Hill on the books for next year. They have Norman Powell on the books for next year, and they'd have CJ Miles. So all these contracts, it would still be on the books, and they're not. I would probably argue that Tim Hardaway is better than all three of those guys. Obviously, he's not super efficient, but he's on a bad team. Then from the New Orleans perspective, I don't think it's terrible, but there's nobody they're trading for that's like that big piece. That guy that can be your first or second best player. OG and Siakam are great guys, but they're more of like a third option. Same thing with Tim Hardaway Jr. and Valanciunas, same thing. I think the only team that's really winning here is Toronto when they get Anthony Davis.
No doubt.
Yeah. So that's going to be a no for me on this trade.
Same.
Moving on to 4.2, Dalton's been working. He's got another trade in this one. Washington would receive Markelle Fultz, Wilson Chandler, Landry Schmidt, 2019 and a 2023 first-round pick from Philly for Bradley Beal.
I mean, Philly is doing this all day, every day, because, I mean, anytime you could trot out a lineup of Ben Simmons, Bradley Beal, Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid, and, I mean, you'd probably – I don't even know who the other star
is. JJ Redick, you could put out there, right. You know.
So then add, right, the shooting for that team would be ridiculous. So if you're the Sixers, you take that all day. For the Wizards, I don't think you're getting nearly enough back. You know, Wilson Chandler, I mean, expiring, older. Who knows how much he really has left. Landry Schmidt, decent young asset. I'm okay with that. But because of the uncertainty around Markelle Fultz, and the draft pick to me isn't going to be anything special. So for me, I don't think the Wizards would do this. But for the Sixers, this is the kind of player they could desperately use.
I don't think it's actually a terrible trade for the Wizards. Like, I think it depends on how you value Fultz. Like you said, Wilson Chandler's not really much, but he's an expiring contract. And Landry's been a good shooter. He's another young piece you have moving forward. And then the two first-round picks, I don't think they'll be amazing, but they are something. So I don't think this would be a deal that would be at the top of the list for Washington. But if they got desperate at the deadline and the Wizards continue to struggle and they look like they're out of the playoff race and they really want to change things up and get some young pieces in there, I think this wouldn't be the worst they can do.
That's fair.
Because I just think the picks, you know, two first-round picks are solid, but they are going to be late. But at least there's two young players. It depends on what the market is for Bradley Beal and anybody really is trying to get him.
I guess, like, and you're right. The thing that really holds me up is just the Markelle Fultz.
Yeah, you have no idea what's going on with him.
Right. And I guess it depends on what teams, how teams view Fultz. Because really, I mean, since Fultz has gotten hurt, we've heard basically nothing about him since the last time he left the court indefinitely. So it depends on where GM still seems. I'm not even sure, you know, I'm sure some GMs probably see him as probably a bust at this point in time. I'm sure some GMs have to think that. And other GMs probably still think that once his shoulders are right, he's probably going to be a really good player again.
Yeah. I mean,
in college, we forget this because of how rough he's been in the NBA. I mean, this was a top-notch college prospect. I mean, he was ridiculous in college, the way he could shoot, the way he could get to the rim. And it just depends on how he gets his shoulders right and how soon that happens.
Yeah. I think a concern would be how he would pair with John Wall, which I don't think would really work unless his shot was to come back. So, like I said, I don't think it'd be at the top of the list, but they could probably do worse than this. At least they're getting some picks and some decent young players.
Yeah.
On to the next one, 4.3. This is Jeremy Fried. Cleveland receives Nicholas Batum, Malik Monk, 2019 second round pick and a 2020 second round pick for J.R. Smith and Jordan Clarkson.
I don't hate this trade. I actually am a fan of this trade. I think for the Hornets' perspective, you get Jordan Clarkson, who has been pretty good this year, obviously on a bad team. He gets a little bit more usage. J.R. Smith, I mean, we know how I stand on J.R. Smith on this podcast. I'm not a fan of him anymore. He's pretty much washed. But you're getting rid of Batum, which is the biggest thing that you can do. And then from Cleveland's perspective, you're getting a young prospect in Monk. You're getting Batum's money, but you're getting two assets, and you're getting J.R. Smith off the books and Clarkson. So I don't think this is a terrible move for the rebuild in Cleveland Cavaliers. But, you know, I'm also not sure why the Hornets would want to get rid of Monk at this junction. I think Monk's like their second or third highest scorer on the team.
Yeah, I think that would be the thing. You know, are they willing to give up on Monk to get that cap space? Because the second year of JR's contract is only partially guaranteed. So they would open up more cap space for Kemba or whatever they're trying to do. Clarkson's been okay. So it's not like they're getting great players in the deal, but they are getting rid of cap. So it's like an in-between trade. I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's great. I think it's like one that just kind of is okay.
Right. I think this is a kind of deal where, like, you know, let's say I'm, you know, near the deadline. The Hornets aren't near the playoff picture. They've dropped a little bit, and they're thinking, all right, let's just get Batum off the books any way we can. This would be like that, like kind of like you mentioned with the Sixers and the Washington trade. Maybe this is the best they can do, but they can get rid of Batum off the books.
Yeah, and I don't think even like getting J.R. Smith and Jordan Clarkson will give them a little bit more depth, so maybe they're not even dropping completely out of the race. They're still kind of staying relevant, but it definitely would just be getting rid of that money. And the second round picks, at least they're not giving up a first, so they could draft another young player if they have a high pick. On to day five, though, Nick's back again. He's got Toronto receiving Bradley Beal, Markieff Morris, and Washington receives Serge Ibaka, Norman Powell, Delon Wright, OG, and Toronto's 2021 first-round pick.
I mean, this is a lot of players moving in this deal. For Toronto's perspective, I think I'm okay with it. Obviously, you're losing Ibaka, who's had a kind of a resurgence this year, but he's still a little bit up there in age. Marcus Morris a little bit younger. I think that's an okay swap. Valanciunas still has some place. Siakam can kind of play a small ball five if you choose to have him there. And Bradley Beal gives you a knockdown perimeter threat. And I think he would fit very nicely alongside of Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry. And then from the Wizards' perspective, you're getting some nice young pieces in Powell, Wright, and Anunoby. And this kind of frees them up too. If they wanted to try and move Otto Porter Jr., you have at least, you know, OJ and Anunoby to fill his place if you were able to move him. So I think this actually is a pretty fair trade on both sides, especially because Washington is getting a first-round pick.
Yeah, I think maybe Washington might want one more pick in this deal just because of the long-term salary they're taking on. Like, Ibaka's done good in Toronto, but he's still got a pretty big year next year. And then Norman Powell has been playing well lately, but will he keep that up for the rest of the 4 years of his contract? OG and Delon Wright, obviously young pieces that are helping you move forward. But Bradley Beal is a very good player, so maybe they ask for another second-round pick or another heavily protected first-round pick. But I think this is a terrible trade. Which trade do you like more, this one for Bradley Beal or the Sixers one?
I like this one more, personally.
Yeah, I think you're getting a little bit more young talent, at least with Delon Wright and OG, and then you're getting the first-round pick. It's, you know, Markelle Fultz kind of makes that other one a little bit scary.
Right, exactly. There's not as many question marks around these players.
Yeah, exactly. So moving on to day 5.1, we got Sacramento receiving Otto Porter Jr., and Washington receives Zach Randolph, Iman Shumpert, Scalab Labizier, and a second-round pick.
Now, I know we're not going to agree on this trade because we already had some slight conversation in the OTG group chat. I'm not a fan of this trade. I don't, from the Kings' perspective, I think it's fine. I think Otto Porter Jr. could be a nice wing in the future. Put him alongside De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, Bogdanovich off the bench. I think Porter Jr. would be a nice fit for Sacramento. For Washington, is this really how desperate we are to move Otto Porter Jr., that the best you can get in is Randolph, who hasn't played all year and is expiring, Iman Shumpert, who's had a decent year but is expiring? I know it's about getting the contract off the books. That's the entire premise of this. But I still feel like you can get a better asset or two for Porter Jr.
I think it's tough to get a better asset for Porter Jr. just because if you look at his contract, he's making 26 this year, 27 next year, and then in 2020 has a $28 million player option, which he's obviously going to accept because I don't think anyone's going to offer him more money than that. It's purely about getting the contract off, and if Washington's season continues to go downhill, I think open cap space in the summertime makes more sense so they can kind of retool the roster. And obviously there's been some chemistry issues, and I've heard, you know, Walt take shots at Otto Porter in his contract, so maybe they make it here. Or maybe Sacramento has to include another pick, a heavily protected first for the future, or maybe another second-round pick. But I think from Washington's perspective, I don't think they want to keep Otto Porter around.
I mean, we've been over this numerous times in the pod. They definitely have to get rid of one of these three big contracts, right? I mean, between Wall, Beal, and Porter, it obviously hasn't worked out the last couple of years. So there is a change that has to be made. And maybe I'm just a little bit higher on Porter Jr. than others. But you're right. I mean, 26 this year, it goes up another million next year. It's not going to get any easier the longer you hold on to a guy like Porter Jr., who, as you've mentioned or alluded to, you know, with his role in Washington, you know, he doesn't really get to showcase his skills that much. So we really don't, his value could be a lot higher if he had a bigger role.
Yeah, I mean, it could end up being a steal for the Kings. I think if Porter's contract was at 20, you know, 21 and then 22, it'd be a lot more movable, but the fact it's just like that extra 5, 6, 7 million, I think it just makes it a little bit harder to move. And Sacramento was a team when he had the Nets offered him that offer sheet, were willing to do the same thing. So this is a team that does have interest. I don't know if there's a ton of teams in the league that are going to kind of take on Otto Porter. The only one that really comes to mind is the New Orleans Pelicans. So on from there to number 5.2, we got Dalton back again. This is an interesting trade. Denver would receive Kemba Walker and Charlotte would receive Jamal Murray, Trey Lyles, and Jared Vanderbilt.
I mean, it's an interesting thought to bring in a veteran like Kemba Walker. Charlotte gets a young guy, gets a couple young guys in the for the future, and Murray and Lyles. Vanderbilt, that's kind of just a cap filler. I don't know why Denver would want to mess up their nucleus, because they've been playing so well. They're the best team in basketball, or just the Western Conference?
Just the West. I believe Toronto has the best record
right.
again.
All right. So they're the number one seed, though, out West, the harder conference as of right now. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting thought. For the Hornets, this is probably more enticing, because you don't have to worry about, you know, what happens if you can't re-sign Kemba in the offseason. But for Denver, I don't know why they would want to shake the boat.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a risk for Denver. If Jamal Murray was still struggling, I think he's played better, you know, later in the season. I think it'd be like, all right, you know, maybe we make this deal. But since he's been playing so well of late, it doesn't necessarily make a ton of sense to move him.
Agreed.
All right, on to 5.3, another crazy one from Nick. Portland receives Jonas Valanciunas, CJ Miles, DeLon Wright, OG for 2019-2023 first-round picks for CJ McCollum and Zach Collins.
This is an interesting trade. Now, Nick's had some crazy trades. This is by far the best one he's done, in my opinion, so far. Because from Portland's standpoint, their biggest issue has kind of been depth. Obviously, they got the two stars in Lillard and McCollum. Nurkic has been really good this year, too. Can't leave him out. But this kind of trade, they give some depth balance with Valanciunas. They get another wing in CJ Miles, who has been kind of, you know, obviously he's been dreadful this year. But who knows? Change of scenery, that may change. DeLon Wright, solid backup point guard. And then OG Anunoby, that's a young defensive wing who can fit in. I think Portland gets a little bit, they get more talent separation. And then for the Raptors' perspective, I mean, CJ McCollum, that's a bona fide scorer alongside Kawhi Leonard and Lowry. You still got Siakam. You still got Danny Green. I think Toronto gets 10 times better if they can add a guy like McCollum. And I think Portland takes maybe a slight step back, but I think they get they just get more depth. And I think that's
not a bad thing. You know, they get some young guys. Yeah, I mean, I know they really like Zach Collins, so that's, you know, obviously not great. But they do get two first-round picks here. So I don't think this is a terrible trade. I think from Toronto's perspective, you look at it as, all right, you know, it's almost a little insurance for Lowry too, because not that CJ McCollum's a point guard, but he can run the show a little bit. You don't have to worry quite as much. It just gives you another guy that can hit big shots in the playoffs.
Not to mention, you know, in the past, Lowry's had to play a lot of minutes. You know, he's been out there. I think last year, the year before, he was top five in minutes per game played. Now, if you had a guy like McCollum, you can do this, you know, situation where Lowry can sit for a little bit and McCollum can run the offense, like you just mentioned.
Yeah, and you still had Fred VanVleet, so it's like you have a good guard depth there, and you're not necessarily losing a ton because they have pieces that can take the minutes from OG and DeLon Wright, and Greg Monroe's been playing a good amount with Valanciunas being out anyway. So
right.
I don't really hate this trade for Toronto. It's kind of going all in. You know, you're giving up a lot of first round picks, but. And I believe they can't give up their 2019 first-round pick, so it would have to be 2021 and 2023. But still, I don't hate this trade either. Now, on to 5.4, a trade that I'm a huge fan of. Washington receives Jimmy Butler, Philly's 2019 first-round pick, and Miami's 2021 first-round pick, and Philadelphia receives Bradley Beal.
You're not a fan of this trade.
It just doesn't really make a ton of sense, I think, for Washington, really. I mean, like, Jimmy Butler's a piece you're getting, but he's almost just a salary filler because he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, and you're just getting – you're getting one late first-round pick and then one pick further in the future, and you really don't know what's going to happen with Miami. It could turn out to be a really good pick, or it could just be an average pick.
Right. Okay, so for me, that's a great point. I mean,
it's good for Philly.
Right. For Philly, this to me, this is a no-brainer for Philly, because I think Bradley Beal fits in with what they want a lot better than Jimmy Butler. Bradley Beal is obviously a perimeter shooter. He can also play make a little bit. Having a lineup out there of, you know, Ben Simmons, J.J. Redick, Bradley Beal, Wilson Chandler at the small ball four, and then Joel Embiid, I think that's a pretty good starting five. And then obviously Butler's been kind of a nuisance for everything he says off the court. And then you made a good point. I think for Washington, you would have to have some sort of guarantee that Butler's going to re-sign.
And you wouldn't.
Right, you wouldn't get that guarantee. But I would be actually kind of intrigued to see a Wall and Butler combo, because I feel like they both have that similar type of personality, where I think they might actually, because of how competitive they are, they might actually gel more so together, or it would just be another cancer situation, which is what it probably would be, because it's Washington.
And honestly, I don't think they'd ever get a chance to play together because Wall's not going to play this year. And I am almost guaranteed that Butler would leave.
Right.
It just doesn't really make a lot of sense. And then Washington would have to offer him a big contract. So, like, it's just every team Jimmy Butler's gone to, it just doesn't seem like it's working out. So Washington already has plenty of issues. Getting Jimmy Butler just doesn't seem to be the answer.
Yeah. I also love the, you know, the projected win difference. And the Sixers don't get any more wins, but the Wizards get plus one win by adding Butler.
I saw one yesterday. We'll probably get to it, but it was like plus 16 wins, and it was for someone crazy. But on to day six, Mike Ryan hits us with the Knicks would receive Zach Randolph, Jared Bayless, and Sky Lazbier, and Minnesota would receive Courtney Lee, and Sacramento would receive Enes Kanter.
I'm a fan of this trade, actually. This is a decent trade because the Knicks are getting rid of Courtney Lee, which is what they've been trying to do. Enes Kanter, the same thing. You know, they signed him. He already has mentioned, I think, the ownership that he wants out, or he wants a bigger role because he, you know, he doesn't play defense. But for the Kings' perspective, you know, you're moving Randolph. You're moving, I can't say his last name, Scal Labert.
You can just say Scal.
Scal. So I think for the Kings, it's not bad. And obviously, Kanter's expiring, so it's not like they have to bring him back next year anyways. And then for the Knicks, yeah, you know, you're getting a nice young piece in Scal. You're getting Jared Bayless, who's a decent third-string point guard. For the Knicks, really, it's just about getting those two contracts off the books.
Yeah, it's cap relief because Courtney Lee still has a second year of his contract. I think that's the only thing that I would look at is I don't know if Minnesota necessarily would want 2 years of Courtney Lee, especially, you know, this year's 12.2 and next year 12.7. So if they maybe got a second-round pick or something there to make it a little bit more enticing, I think it would work out. But overall, I think it works out for the Kings. Get a bench scoring, Enes Kanter can really help that playoff push. And then for the Knicks, just pure cap relief, and then Scal taking a flyer on him, and maybe they can kind of turn him into something special because the Kings don't really have much interest in him.
For sure.
On to our next one, day 6.1. Dalton back at it again. Cleveland receives point guard Brandon Knight in a 2019 first-round pick. Houston receives J.R. Smith.
I mean, this is a really, super, really fair trade, a decent trade, I think, actually. Houston wants to get rid of Brandon Knight. I think Cleveland would be happy to get a draft pick for J.R. Smith. A young point guard in Brandon Knight isn't terrible just for the season or whatever the case may be. And then the Rockets take a flyer on J.R. Smith, who's a three-point shooter who might get some better looks in that kind of offensive system that they have down in Houston. I find it funny that for some reason getting rid of J.R. Smith makes the Cleveland Cavaliers lose minus 14 games.
Yeah, this is funny. This might have been the one that I was talking about right here. Is the 14, yeah. And J.R. hasn't even been playing. So, but I think it's pure cap relief, too, for Houston because another error in the trade machine, Brandon actually has 2 years on his contract. So J.R. Smith's second year of his contract is partially guaranteed. So the Rockets could, you know, cut him at the end of next season and then get some more relief for them and maybe make a move in free agency or just ease up their books a bit. And then the Cavs, this is what you do as a rebuilding team. You take on bad contracts for a first-round pick.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Why is the trade machine messing up the contract years? That's kind of annoying. But
it is. It's pretty constant, too. There's been a lot of contracts. I think Solomon Hill, J.R. Smith, Brandon Knight. Like, there's just been guys have been incorrect.
Yeah, but I agree with you just said. That's a good point.
On to day 6.2, Dalton again. He's got the Pacers receiving Kemba Walker for Aaron Holiday, TJ Leaf, Doug McDermott, a 2019 first-round pick, and a 2021 second-round pick. Thoughts on this one for your squad?
Salivating. I like this deal a lot. I think it would make a lot of sense for the Pacers because you're not giving up anything, really. You know, Doug McDermott, that contract, goodbye. TJ Leaf actually has been pretty solid. I haven't been a giant TJ Leaf fan since they drafted him, not this last draft, the draft prior. And with Miles Turner being out, he's played some minutes. He's actually played pretty decent, which has been impressive. I think Austin Holiday is going to be a decent backup point guard in the league for years to come. I don't know if he's going to be a starter, but he's shown some offensive pop. And for the Pacers, you know, they've been this. You know, KMT just wrote a great piece on are the Pacers contenders or pretenders. And he made the point that they're pretty much a piece away from actually probably being a real threat. And Kemba Walker could be that piece that pushes the Pacers over the edge. It would be another scoring punch for them. So I think for the Pacers, if you think you have a chance to, you know, sign Kemba Walker long term, obviously he's expiring, so you'd have to make the point that he would want to be there long term. I think it could work. And I think if Kemba was to come into Indiana, just because I know the culture we have and Obviously, the young guys in there with Oladipo, Sabonis, and Turner. I think Kemba would really buy into Indiana. Another small market. He doesn't. I think he would enjoy it if this trade was to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it's a terrible trade. I think Charlotte might want to touch more. Yeah, because TJ Leaf, like you said, he's been okay of late, but like he hasn't really shown a ton. Aaron Holiday is like the main piece in this deal because Doug McDermott, you still have to pay him for the next 2 years too. And not to say he's a bad player, but it's not like he's moving the needle. So maybe Indiana has to throw another protected first-round pick in here, and I think Charlotte does it. But I think the Pacers, on the other hand, would want some type of commitment from Kemba, which they could possibly get because, like you said, it's not like the Pacers are a bad culture team. They have a good environment. The fan base is good. So I think a little bit of work in this trade, and it could happen.
Yeah, this is a pretty good trade, Dalton. I appreciate you giving the Pacers Kemba Walker.
So now on to day 6.3, we got another trade from Nick. He's been busy. Orlando receives Jonas Valanciunas, Norman Powell, CJ Miles, DeLon Wright, OG, Toronto's 2021 first-round pick for Aaron Gordon, Nikola Vucevic, and Jonathan Simmons.
Right off the bat, there's no way in hell Orlando does this because I don't think they're getting nearly enough for the talent they're giving up in Aaron Gordon. And then Vucevic has been solid. So I think this trade works if it's like either Aaron Gordon or Vucevic because both those guys are in the deal. I just think it's a lot that Orlando's giving up, and they're not getting any eye-popping talent back for what they're giving up. For the Raptors standpoint, though, I mean, you can get Aaron Gordon and Vucevic and then even throw in a filler of Jonathan Simmons as a nice role player off the bench. I think you do it for the win-now purposes, but I don't see why Orlando would do that. Obviously, Orlando does get a nice piece in OG and Anunoby. DeLon Wright's been solid. Maybe he could be a point guard for them in the future, and Norman Powell. But I don't think Orlando gets nearly enough back in this deal for the names they're giving up.
Yeah, I think they still have a lot of faith in Aaron Gordon, giving him that contract. Obviously, he had a really big game last night. I think ideally when you're moving a player like Aaron Gordon and Nikola Vucevic, you want to move them in separate deals. Because, like, you're not going to get even value. I think they could move Vucevic in a deal and probably get a late first-round pick from a team. And then Aaron Gordon, they could move to another team and maybe get young players in another first-round pick. I don't think it's horrendous if you're, you know, put it in a vacuum. But I think when you're trading players like that, you're hoping to get somebody who's going to be a star on the other side. And I don't think DeLon Wright or OG are necessarily going to be a star. They could be, you know, above-average starters. OG probably has a lot of potential, but he hasn't shown a ton this year. Maybe if you throw Siakam in this trade, Orlando might think about it.
Yeah, and then but then from Toronto's perspective, which is probably what Nick's perspective was, I don't think they're going to want to give up Siakam for
exactly because you're not getting great defenders, and Siakam has that versatility to defend multiple positions. He's a one-man fast break. So, I mean, maybe you throw in another first-round pick or something along those lines. It's just tough when you're moving this many players.
Agreed.
Now on to 6.4. I told you Nick and Dalton have pretty much been grinding and throwing out a ton of trades. This trade I think it makes sense for both parties. Maybe you get a third team involved in taking on Enes Kanter. So the Knicks would receive Jabari Parker, Chicago would receive Enes Kanter, both expiring. You know, Parker has the team option for next year.
Yeah, I think this makes a lot of sense. Obviously, as you mentioned, they're both expiring unless the team option is picked up. And I think for the Knicks, you know, you're getting rid of Kanter. Whatever. You're bringing in the young guy, Jabari Parker. So we forget he's still very young. And you give him a chance. You give him a chance under a hard-nosed coach in Dave Fizdale. And, you know, culture has been kind of changing in New York this year, it feels like. So who knows? Maybe they bring him in. Maybe he has a really good second half of the year in New York. And then maybe New York decides, because we've heard rumors that he may not go after any free agents in 2019. So maybe they pick up his team option and they go into next year with Porzingis, Jabari, Knox, and a lot of these young guys. They don't go after a superstar just yet. They play out next year. Maybe they even try and flip Jabari Parker next by next deadline, and then they attack the 2020 free agency draft class. But I like this deal. I think it would make sense for both sides.
Yeah, I think it makes a little bit more sense for the Knicks because they can take the flyer on Jabari Parker. Chicago, Enes Kanter, I think, wants to play and win, and they obviously have some focus on the young guys. So if they could get, like, a third team involved, or maybe you just send a late second-round pick or, like, a heavily protected second-round pick to Chicago to kind of ease this out. But I don't think it's a bad deal. I think both parties would be happy with the change of scenery.
Definitely the change of scenery would be needed for both guys.
So on to day 6.5, Evan Dial, John Lair, Ish Smith, Stanley Johnson going to Atlanta, as well as a 2019 protected first-round picks from picks 1 through 14. And Detroit would receive Jeremy Lin, Dwayne Dedman, and Charlotte's 2019 second-round pick.
I don't hate it, but this is not the deal the Pistons need. And what I mean by that is, like, I think Ish Smith and Jeremy Lin, kind of a wash. I think Jeremy Lin may give you a slightly more offensively, but Ish Smith has been pretty pivotal to what they do there. I think Dwayne Dedmon would be a nice backup, but the issue for the Pistons is they don't have any perimeter scoring, a perimeter shooter. So I don't think this trade addresses.
Dedmon can shoot threes. He's really worked on that this year, and I've seen him knock down like four or five in a game.
Really?
Yeah, so that's something to consider. Also, I think one thing that makes it a little bit more intriguing for Detroit is John Lear has another year in his contract. So that's cleaning up some cap if they don't necessarily want to keep Lin or Dedmon. So now they're getting 9.5 off the books for next year, and we know how bad their books are with Andre Drummond, Reggie Jackson, and Blake Griffin's contract.
All right, so maybe it's not as bad as I initially thought, but I still feel like Detroit would want to add more perimeter shooting. Even though Dedmon's that has been that guy this year, and
actually he was a better 3-point shooter than Ish Smith too.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You know. Definitely. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe this isn't as bad of a deal as I think. It just doesn't look right to me.
I think the fact I had some input on the trade, the first round pick being protected 1 through 14, I think makes it a little bit more enticing for Detroit because now, hey, we don't make the playoffs, we don't give up our pick. If we make the playoffs, this trade makes sense and everything's okay and we got cap relief and maybe we're able to keep, you know, Lin or Dedmon in the offseason.
Fair.
Because I think now they would have their bird right, so it seems more likely. And then on the Atlanta side, they're getting a possible first-round pick. They're getting Stanley Johnson. They could take a flyer on him. They're taking on the bad contract in Lear, which is what bad teams do. And Ish Smith is just another backup point guard for them to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes – I mean, for Atlanta's perspective, it's why not. You know, John
Lear – Detroit gets a second-round pick too, and I'm not 100% sure, but they may or may not have a second-round pick. And Charlotte's second-round pick probably is at least going to be, you know, like top 15, top 18.
Right. No, it should be.
So I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's great, but I think Detroit could get desperate and want to make the playoffs when they have all the contracts. Having another bad season, having players like Blake, Andre on the team just doesn't seem great. On to another trade via Evan Dial, day 7. Houston Rockets receive Kent Bazemore. Atlanta receives Brandon Knight and 2 second-round picks.
Probably a deal we're going to see, honestly. If I had to pick any of these trades that we're probably going to actually see come to tuition, would probably be this one. Houston's been tied to Kent Bazemore since Melo was cut from – well, not cut from the team, but placed out of the arena for the team. And Brandon Knight's been, you know, it's a journeyman at this point in time. So I think for Atlanta, why not? You bring him in, you get 2 draft picks, some young assets. You're moving Bazemore's contract. I think for Houston, this is a good – I think it's a good deal for both sides, realistically.
And Atlanta saves $5 million in cap space the next year with, you know, the difference in Bazemore and Knight's contract. I mean, I think the 2 second-round picks are okay. I could see Atlanta maybe wanting a first-round pick, and it's going to be a late first-round pick anyways, especially if they make this move. But, yeah, I think this is a trade that we could definitely see happen. But that wraps it up so far, what we have in the trade deadline. So, you know, this is day 7. We're going to be going up every day up until the NBA trade deadline. So be sure to check out otgbasketball.com for fresh trades. But I'm going to pass it over to you, Corey.
All right. So now we're going to do a little game of what's the trade value. Basically, I'm going to give a player's name and we'll give them a letter grade, you know, A, B, C, or D on what their trade value is. I got 10 guys down.
Okay. Give me the best player first so I can – create a like notion about value.
Okay. Well, probably the biggest name on this list is Kevin Love.
Okay. That's an interesting one. So I'm going to go with a B minus because of his contract. I think he's a solid player. Actually, I might even go a C plus in this situation just because of the injury concern and the contract length, but you are getting a good player. In terms of talent, he's, you know, probably a B plus to an A minus, but then when you factor in contract and injury, he's probably closer to a C plus.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. I had a C plus for the same reason, because the contract and injury history, I have him as a C plus. If he wasn't hurt at all this year and we saw like probably Kevin Love healthy to this point, it probably would be a B minus.
And you look at the contract, it's 24 this year, 28 next year, 31 the next year, 31 and 28 in 2022. So you're locked up to Kevin Love, and you're not probably going to be able to move that contract again until it becomes, you know, 2021 or 2022 if you're in like a salary dump or an expiring deal.
Yeah, no, 100%. So then next up, Otto Porter Jr.
This is tough. I would probably put him I would probably put him at like a B minus or a C plus as well. I think he has injury concern as well. His contract isn't quite as long as Kevin Love, but he's probably not quite as good as Kevin Love.
Yeah, I picked a B minus because of the role he has had in Washington and then the contract situation. I didn't actually think about the injury history, and he's had some hip injuries.
He's missed a lot of games. He's missed playoff games too. So I think that comes with a concern. I think I'd actually solidify him as like a C plus with the contract.
I wasn't thinking about the injury. The injuries to me would probably push his value down to a C. And now next up, Nicholas Batum.
That is like as bad as you can get. That's a pure F.
Yo, you gave him a pure F. See, I gave him a D. I gave him a D because I still think he's got like some value in the fact that he can still do a little bit scoring, assisting, and rebounding. But obviously, he's not efficient, and the contract has got awful, and he's up there in age. The Achilles injury has really set him back.
Yeah, he's not going to get better. He's like $10 million overpaid, maybe $20 million overpaid because he's so inconsistent. You really have no idea what you're getting for him. He's 24 this year, 25 next year, and 27 in 2020.
Yeah. No, that's
probably arguably one of the worst contracts in the NBA.
No, I mean, hey, Nick, you know from at least our time on this pod that I have never been a fan of Nicholas Batum's contract.
Yeah.
I tweet about it quite often. It was the worst mistake the Hornets made. It took a big swing to try and add help for Kemba Walker. And it always sucks when it doesn't work out like you plan.
And like the contract wouldn't have been quite as bad if they just cut down the years. You know, like everybody was getting overpaid at that time. If they gave him like a 2 or 3 year deal.
It was 5 years, right?
Yeah. If they gave him a shorter deal, it would have been okay.
Yeah, no, I agree. So next up, DJ Augustine was having a career year from Orlando Magic.
Interesting. I have to pull up his contract real quick to see the length, but I believe he's an expiring.
2 years, $7 million, I think.
I would say he's pretty much a solid a B. Because $7 million for a backup point guard that can add 3-point shooting, his defense is kind of a question. So maybe a B minus. I got to be harsh because A plus is a reserve for great players.
No, I 100% agree. I don't think any of these guys are A plus in value.
B minus for me.
I had him at a B only because of the career highs in shooting that I think his value is probably up. I think probably on a normal year he's probably a B minus to a C plus, but because of the elevated stats, I push him to a B.
I think my concern with him be his size and defensive liability.
I agree. Depending on if there's not a lot of defenders who can kind of hide him, he probably would have issues.
Yeah, he wouldn't be terrible in like a team that has able to hide him, like you said, maybe like a Utah or a Boston or like an OKC that have a great defensive units.
Right. Next up, Amon Shumpert.
I think Amon Shumpert's probably a solid B. He's having a decent year, maybe a B minus. He's an expiring contract, so you're not taking much risk, and you're not going to have to trade a first-round pick. You could probably get him for a second, and I think he gives your team solid depth.
No, I agree. I've been a B as well on him. Really, just kind of – we mentioned this on one of the last pods. He kind of feels like he's a man now. He kind of grew up, it looks like. He's one of those big voices, I feel like, in Sacramento's locker room. It's just from media sound bites and everything else. I think there's going to be a lot of teams calling for him at the deadline.
Yeah, definitely interesting thing. And like I said, it's not like he's an expiring deal and the Kings aren't going to ask a lot for him.
Right. Next up, Reggie Jackson.
Ooh, that's a bad contract. That's probably like a C minus or a D plus because his problem is the contract is bad and he can't stay on the court and he's just not the same player he was. You know, it's 17 this year and then 18 next year. So probably closer to like a C minus because it's not long term, but I don't know how much he's really playing or helping your team win games.
I like how we're both on the same page. I had him at a C minus. The shooting splits are dreadful, you know, under 40% for both the field and from three. The contract.
Yeah, I'll move him down to a D plus then.
Yeah. The knee tendonitis, which as you've mentioned numerous times, does not go away. Yeah, it's going to be rough for them. And I think he's one of the players in Detroit that they really could use off the books because he's just not helping. They need a true point guard, and Reggie Jackson may have been that at one point in time, what they could have used, but it just doesn't work because of the injuries.
Pretty much.
Wesley Matthews.
It's an interesting one. He's an expiring deal as well, I believe.
Yep.
He's like a C plus. You know, it's still $18 million. I don't think they asked for a first round pick last year. They're not going to get that, so probably a second round pick. So he's like a good bet to have off the bench, but nothing more than that.
Yeah, I have him as a C. I think he gives you some perimeter shooting, an okay defender, but he's not as quick as he used to be. Obviously, another guy suffered an Achilles injury. And besides shooting threes, he doesn't really give you that much. And as you mentioned, the $18 million expiring.
It's good if you could get Dallas to take on something that has another year or two, but they probably won't because they want their cap space because they're going to have a ton of it this upcoming offseason.
Exactly. A name we mentioned already of one of the trades, Kent Bazemore.
I would give Kent Bazemore probably a B minus because I think he can add to your team offensively, defensively, not going to necessarily have to give up a ton to get him. The contract is a little bit ugly, so I think a B minus is fair.
I gave him a B. I think just slightly higher on the fact that he can do a little bit of everything. Is a little bit inconsistent, but I think for some of the guys who are available right now in a lot of trade talks, I feel like he's probably one of the better wings you can get at this point in time.
Yeah, and he's not too old too. It's not like he's, you know, peaked. So I think he's probably like late 20s, so he's got a couple good years. I think his contract isn't horrendous, but you'll be paying him $19 million next year.
Yeah. Two more left.
Okay.
Tyreke Evans.
Honestly, he'd probably be like a C plus to a B minus because he obviously has been great for the Pacers, but he's an expiring deal and maybe a change of scenery could get him going. I think depending on the team, it could make a big difference. If he's getting the ball in his hands a lot, he's going to be better. But if he's not, then he's not going to be great.
I gave him a C. I haven't seen the guy I saw last year in Memphis. He moves around the court the same. He does the same kind of – he takes the same type of three-point shots he was taking last year. They're just not falling this year. And it could just be a change of scenery. But I think the Tyreke Evans experiment in Indy has more or less failed for what they were hoping to get. He's basically just been Lance Stephenson 2.0 with not as fun antics.
Yeah, and I mean, the Pacers are probably, what, trading for a second-round pick, you think?
Yeah, somewhere like that, yeah.
Depending on, it would probably need a contract match to get something expiring, but it's definitely like, it's not a terrible deal. If he were to play better, it's someone, you know, you need to take a risk and get somebody in there. And the expiring deal, you're not long-term commitment. So it's not like a horrendous move, but like you said, he hasn't been great this year.
Right. I think some teams would be interested in having Tyreke Evans as the playmaker off the bench.
For sure.
A ball handler. And lastly, now this one's kind of interesting. I don't even know if he's available, but Derrick Rose.
This is an interesting one. His contract's extremely low. He's been playing like a six man. He's even been playing better defense, I think, this year as well. His contract's only $2.1 million. He's probably like a B plus, but I don't think Minnesota's going to trade him. I don't think he's available. I think they're happy with what's going on. They've had some good momentum and they seem like a really like happy bunch. So I think Derrick Rose is probably not going to get moved, but I would probably put him at like a B or a B plus.
See, and I had him at as a B. And the only reason I put him on here is I was just thinking, you know, he's expiring at the end of the year. They have Jeff Teague. Tyus Jones has been playing more minutes since Saunders has taken over and honestly playing some really good minutes now that he's actually getting some playing time.
Yeah, coach minutes last night too.
Right. So I kind of feel if you probably can't move Jeff Teague, right? The contract's a little bit too big. He's trash. And Tyus Jones could be the future. It may be if I'm Minnesota, who also is paying, you know, Wiggins and Towns some big money, it may not be the worst thing to get rid of Derrick Rose, who has a lot of value now, and then look towards having Tyus Jones kind of be, you know, the point guard, but getting more minutes play while you still have Jeff Teague. It just depends on where you see Derrick Rose long term. Because if they don't plan on bringing him back, I don't know why you hold on to him.
Yeah, I think they want to make the playoff push, and I also don't think they mind playing Tyus Jones and Derrick Rose together. Like, I think they don't mind playing Rose at the two a little bit because he's still pretty athletic where he's done a decent job defending guys a little bit bigger than him.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's actually the one good thing about Minnesota's guard play is most of those guards can play either the one or the two.
Yeah, and Tyus Jones, even though size-wise defensively he can't play the two, he can still give you some floor spacing a little bit. So I think they look to keep him because I don't know. Derrick Rose, I don't think, wants to be traded. I think he's happy in Minnesota because he's finally getting his game back too.
No, I agree. And the fan base has really embraced Derrick Rose, and he's obviously had his big 50-game performance there. So I agree. How much he's been moved around the last couple of years, any player would want to have some sort of stability.
Yeah, 100%. Anybody else, Corey, that you can think off the top of the head?
I mean, I guess an interesting name would be from Toronto's perspective, who are trying to move some guys, Jonas Valanciunas.
That is an interesting one because he doesn't really like move the needle for you as your starting center, but he's a solid piece. It's just like, yeah, 16 this year and 17 next year. So if you're trading for him, you probably want him to be a starter. I'd probably put him at like a B minus. Because yeah, he's solid, but he's not great.
I'd probably go with C plus only because he's still a defensive liability, I think.
Yeah, he's good in terms of like being a presence in the paint, but getting on the perimeter, he doesn't have that.
Right. It's one of those guys where come playoff time, I just don't know if he can play more than like 20 minutes a game, if that.
What about Jeremy Lin?
I would probably give Jeremy Lin a B minus or a C plus, somewhere in that range, because I think he still can be a sixth man for most NBA teams that are trying to compete for a playoff spot. You just don't want to rely on him heavily on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I think a B minus would be fair for him, maybe even a B, depending on how much Atlanta's asking for him. I think it really depends a lot, too.
Oh, I got one more guy, actually, a little bit of a bigger name, Vucevic.
I think he's like a B to a B plus because he is expiring, so you're trading probably a late first to get him, but he's going to give your team a big boost, especially depending on where you play him, because he's been really good this year.
Yeah, he has been. I'd probably go with a B. Because I think I just don't know the exact fit. Because you know he's kind of
even there's only a couple teams that could really work him in, to be honest.
Right, and actually, this is how we should end the game because there's a team obviously that's had a ton of turmoil, and that's the Boston Celtics. So let's just go through a couple of the guys who could be traded. Jaylen Brown.
That's an A minus probably for me. I think he would be a guy, a B plus or an A minus. You know, you have Jaylen Brown, you have him on contract 5.1 this year, 6.3 next year. Then he's a restricted free agent, so you can keep him. And I think there's a lot of potential. He's a guy that just needs more minutes. You go from playing 30 plus minutes in the playoffs to playing, you know, your role is all over the place in Boston now with all the pieces they have. So I would be happy to get him on my team because I think he would just blossom in a different situation. And that's nothing against Brad Stevens. It's just like they literally might have too much talent.
Yeah, no, I would give him probably an A minus too. A lot of youth still. We saw what he could do, as you mentioned, when he had the minutes last season. And this year with the role and everything else, it hasn't been working in Boston. And it feels like every time we think they figured it out, then they go on this stretch where they, you know, lost to the Heat and they lost to the Magic. And last night's loss was really bad.
Yeah, they blew a 12-point lead. They had a lot of opportunities too, and they just like couldn't get stops on Orlando. Even at the end of the game, they almost got a steal to give themselves a chance to win the game, and they couldn't get it.
Right, and you know, we could go on.
I mean, Tatum could have tied at the buzzer too, but you know, like we said, we could go on about them, and there's all the comments after the game from Stevens, Kyrie, to Al Horford.
Yeah, so another Celtic, Terry Rozier, who's expiring.
This is a tougher one. If you trade for him, he's a restricted free agent, so you pretty much have his rights to extend him. I would put him closer to a B minus because Rozier, like I wasn't 100% sold on him last year because he was very sporadic and his home and road, his splits weren't great. And you're going to have to pay him big money because there's a good chance that someone's going to offer him a big deal in Orlando or Phoenix or something like that.
I would agree. It's funny because like, if you went like at the off season, I probably would have said his value is like a B plus to an A minus.
Yeah, for sure. But I think this season, it just not being able to fit in the role hurts. And like I said, I'm just not personally 100% sold on Terry Rozier as a starting point guard. That's just me. I know a lot of people are on that hype and he's had a lot of great moments, but I think some of his shooting splits are somewhat scary.
Yeah, especially. But another guy, you know, it's the same thing with Jaylen Brown. The role fit has been his issue. And he's one of those guys who really needs to be out there. I mean, he played the other night, I think 18 minutes and he took 8 shots in 18 minutes or something like that. And he had like the third most shots on the Celtics for the night. He only played in 18 minutes. You know, and anytime a guy gets those minutes and he's just going gung ho, trying to will his own offense, it's just problematic.
Yeah. I think I'm just personally a bigger fan of what Jaylen Brown can do. And I just have more confidence in his skill set than Rozier's.
I would agree. I mean, I think, and especially like the wing position, as we know, is probably the most important position in the NBA. Well, the point guard position is still very important, but now the wing position is what everyone is targeting. Like you need to have wings who can guard.
You need to have a lot of wings too. You can't just have 2 wings. You need to have, you know, 4, maybe 5, because sometimes you're playing 3 wings at a time.
And they got to be versatile. They got to be able to match up with 2, 3s, or 4s, and maybe even 1s, depending on who they are.
That's why I like Jaylen Brown. That's why, because I think like as he develops even more, he's getting stronger. He can deal with a little bit more, you know, versatility in terms of defense.
Exactly.
Anybody else from Boston?
I mean, we can make the case of a guy I don't think he's going to get moved. Actually, why not? Gordon Hayward.
I think, you know, based off of this year,
D minus.
Yeah, probably based off of this year, just because, you know, we don't know how much better he's going to get with the injury. 31 this year, 32 in 2019, 34 in 2020 on a player option. And it's not like he's the youngest guy.
You honestly would have to package probably a draft pick with him to get rid of him.
Or one of the young guys, like one of the young pieces you have, you'd probably have to package to get rid of
him. Right.
So,
which if I'm Boston, no offense, I probably do. Because I think actually Gordon Hayward may be the biggest problem to the Celtics team.
Yeah, and it's always a tough situation when you have a player coming back from injury because you know he can get probably close to the level he's at, but it's going to take a lot of reps. How much does that hurt the team? How much does that hurt the chemistry of the team?
I don't think it's his fault necessarily. But, you know, not to go back in the conversation of what happened last night for the game, it sounded like Kyrie was really frustrated with Gordon Hayward after the last night's game.
Yeah, which I get and I also don't get because it's not like Jason Tatum is a bad player and didn't get a decent shot. He almost made the shot. Kyrie just being, I guess, the alpha on that team wants that shot. He wants to be the man.
Right.
Do you feel confident? You know, obviously, at the beginning of the season, Kyrie said that he's going to be back in Boston. Do you feel less confident about that statement after the way the season's gone for the Celtics?
After the last two games, actually, yes. I'm worried about it. You know, last night he waited till everyone dressed and left till he got out of uniform. He sat at his locker staring straight ahead. And, you know, I saw someone comment, that's like the equivalent to someone posting, I'm annoyed on Facebook.
I guess it is. I mean,
because obviously.
And with his statements about, you know, these guys don't know what it takes to be a championship level team. They think it's hard now. It's only going to get harder. We want to make the finals.
Yeah, and, you know, he made the one comment in that, and I'm telling you, it was directed at Hayward. He said some guys used to be able to get away with their athletic ability and not being able to work hard, and that doesn't work anymore. And there's only two guys on that team that aren't young, and that's Al Horford, who's got a knee injury, who I don't think Kyrie would be calling out, and Gordon Hayward, which to me becomes more problematic because, you know, Hayward and Irving, if they're going to stay in Boston, they're going to be together for the next, you know, 3-4 years. They're locked up. They're not going anywhere. So, yeah, I'm a little bit more problematic. And who knows, you know, if this team does stumble, Nick, you're right. Kyrie Irving is going to look at his other options because he has made it clear that he wants to win. He wants to be the guy. And if he doesn't think Boston's going to be that place, then he'll go look to play with one of his buddies.
Yeah, or he could just come home to New York, you know.
Right.
I want to throw out a couple of Nets players for you. Damari Carroll.
I'd probably say a B-.
Yeah, I'd probably say a B minus B or a B because he's been really good over the last stretch. He's had, like, gotten really hot, and he's expiring deal. But you do have to find $15 million to match the contract in the trade. The Nets, I don't think the Nets are going to give him away for free. They'd want a late first round pick if they're going to move Damari because he means a lot more to the team than just his play.
No, yeah, it's actually funny. We watched the Nets game, me and my dad, the other night, and he was talking the post game, and my dad was saying like. He's a really well-spoken guy. And he's like, is he a big member of their team? I was like, yeah, he's probably one of their leaders. And yeah, you know, Damari Carroll has been a stud for them. And obviously Kenny Atkinson's guy. And I'm a big fan of Carroll.
Kenny loves him. He said, you know, Damari's the type of player, you tell him anything, he'll do whatever the team wants. He doesn't care about his role. So he's just a perfect guy to have to kind of fit in. What about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson?
Oh man. This is funny because before this year in particular, he was probably my favorite Net. And obviously the injuries have kind of hurt him this year. I'd probably have to say his value is probably like a C+ to a C.
Yeah, it's probably a C+. The only positive if you do trade for Rondae, it's a small contract and you do have his rights. If you believe you can kind of turn him to something different, I think you would need to, his ideal fit is playing with a stretch center. Or like we talked about it on the Brooklyn Buzz, you know, possibly like a team like Boston or Golden State could really benefit from a player like Rondae because they can make great use of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some kind of ways, just thinking like a quick player comparison, don't think too much into it, like a Thaddeus Young. I think he can be that kind of player where he gives you high energy. He obviously can't shoot the three ball, but he can be pretty effective around the rim.
Yeah, I think that's his, you know, and he needs to develop the three. He needs to have at least, you know, Thaddeus's three ball isn't great, but he can knock it down once in a while. Yeah, and that's what Rondae needs, and I don't think he's ever gotten that yet. Like you mentioned, injuries have kind of killed him. Shabazz Napier.
I mean, over the last month, he's been extremely good for you guys. So I probably would say C+.
Yeah, and small contract, backup point guard that can kind of give you something off the bench. Not a bad piece to have, especially if you get injuries. And next year of his contract is non-guaranteed, so it doesn't work out. You can just cut him.
Yeah, if he was a slightly better defender, I would probably want to push him to a B minus. But
If he
because
had
of
more
that,
size, yeah, it's the size that's really the issue. He can only really work well in certain matchups. So, I mean, if I had to play a guess which two Nets would be most likely, or the most likely Nets to be moved, it would probably be Rondae, Shabazz, or Kenneth Faried. But funny enough, people have had interest in Kenneth Faried via Shams, but I don't see why.
I mean, I've only watched the only Kenneth Faried I've seen recently was that the Milwaukee Bucks game. Where obviously the Nets were shorthanded, so they had to play Fried, and he had a double double in that game.
Yeah.
He really turned it on in the second half in particular. I mean, yeah, I just, like you said, there might be some interest in it, but I still think any team that acquires him, I mean, you're not looking to play Fried any more than 15 minutes, right? There can't be a team out
He's
there
just
that just.
an energy big that can give you a couple of layups, a couple of dunks, some rebounds. He's not amazing defensively. If you can get him to buy in and get him energized, maybe it makes sense. I think, like, I've heard the idea of maybe OKC because of the Nerlens Noel injury, if they wanted to get some type of big. But again, the Nets are not looking to take on long-term contract unless it's a very good young player. So that
Right.
makes it hard to move him.
That's a good point.
But I think that wraps it up, Corey. As always, like we said, make sure you check out otgbasketball.com for the trade deadline. The guys are doing a ton of work. We're going to have trades up until the deadline. So pretty much for, oh, what is it? See if I can do the math quickly off the top of my head. Be like 24 days more of NBA trades at otgbasketball.com, and we'll be touching on the outlet. So check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, otgbasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
I love it. Peace out, knuckleheads.